You know, Mama, there's one thing everybody's got in common. Nobody wants to be alone. Because a man without a woman is just like Lone Ranger. Listen, everybody needs some loving. Everybody, well, babe, want some hugging, someone to love you and reassure you when you're feeling bad. Well, babe, a kind word to cure you.
Welcome back to the Rodcast. It is a Smooth Soul Monday edition of the Rodcast, and that's when Patrick plays jams intended to soothe the tortured soul of sports fans who might have had a tough weekend. That is definitely the case for the Aggies out there. They could use a Smooth Soul Monday. We'll talk about the Longhorns' victory over the Aggies here and break that down. Also, thanks to Patrick, all of our musically themed days of the week. Thanks to Patrick and his creativity. He also comes up with the topic for the Big Fat Poll of the Day, which is also posted right now at the Horn ATX on X. Patrick, what is the topic for the Big Fat Poll of the Day?
Big Fat Poll today. Who is the MVP for Texas against Texas A&M? Right now, you've got Trey Wisner with the heavy lead. No surprise there with 80% of the vote. Vernon Broughton at 16% and 5% for Michael Taft.
Yeah, see, this is why, yeah, I mean, we knew Trey Wisner was going to run away with it. We just have, I mean, I gave you the list. Shout out to John Bianco because he threw out the stat. But if you go look at the best rushing performances all time versus the Aggies for the Longhorns, best Longhorn rushing games versus A&M, my man Sed B, the late great Sed B, at the top of the list, 2003 had 283 yards versus the Aggies in College Station, by the way. 259 rushing yards for Ricky Williams in 1998. That was in Austin. Then there's the great Earl Campbell, right? College Station, he ran for 222 yards in 1977. And then fourth is Quintravion. You're damn right. We're going to call him Quintravion. His mama called him Quintravion. We're going to call him Quintravion. 186 yards versus the Aggies. 186 yards. And that puts him fourth all-time. Best rushing performances by a Longhorn versus the Aggies. And then behind him is Ricky Williams again. 183 yards versus the Aggies in College Station. That, I mean, that's the stuff legends are made of. That's a legendary performance by him. His best game he's ever had. To have your best game ever be against your rival on arguably the biggest stage and the biggest game of the year for your team. I mean, you can't ask for more than that. Clutch, and that's he's on a bit of a heater, because now in the back-to-back weeks he's ran for 344 yards on almost 60 carries. Guys don't get 60 rushes. I think he's got 59 or something like that. You don't get 60 rushes in back-to-back weeks in college football anymore. And for Sark to trust him to that extent, and that was kind of my takeaway, you know, from the game, is that, you know, yes, I predicted they'd be 11-1. I did. I predicted they'd be 11-1 beginning of the season. I drank too much of the Kool-Aid before they played Georgia, and then I, on our picks, I did say Texas was going to beat Georgia, even though at the beginning of the season I said Texas would lose to Georgia. But either way, beginning of the season I had them 11-1. I'll admit now it looks nothing like I thought it would look. There's no part of this 11-1 really that looks exactly how I envisioned. I mean, you think about it. Who thought Gunnar Helm would be your leading receiver at this point? Anybody? Anybody thought he, out of the Isaiah Bond and all the talk about Silas Bolden, all the talk about Matthew Golden, you know, Ryan Wingo and his emergence early on, who thought Gunnar Helm would be the leading receiver? I didn't. Didn't see that coming. Did anybody see the defense? Yeah, we saw the defense improving, but did we see the defense being the best defense in the country and maybe one of the top 3 to 5 greatest defenses in Texas football history? No. Didn't see that coming. Didn't see that. Myself, including most of you guys, you thought that the strength of the team, the identity, would be the offense. We all thought it would be the offense. That's not necessarily the case. The offense is good. It's really good. But it's not the most consistent element of the team. It's the defense. And the run game at this point. After C.J. Baxter goes down, you know, watching, you know, Jaden Blue with his inconsistency. At one point, he was the catalyst of the offense and was one of your, not only leading your team in rushes, but also second on your team in targets. And then he's not as reliable or not as trustworthy because of the ball security issues. We thought Jared Gibson would have more of a role because he showed a lot of promise being able to run the football downhill, got some exceptional traits as a runner. But the Kim Kardashian, Nicki Minaj, Serena Williams, Cardi B, Megan Thee Stallion, but right now as a youngster, you can't really trust him with ball security and some of the pass protection issues. So it comes down to trust. And who figured that Trey Wisner would end up being your bell cow workhorse running back at this point in the season? Anybody see that coming? I did not. Didn't see it coming. thought the passing game would lead the way and that would be the identity of the team. And yes, your passing game is still, an effective and lethal one at times. But right now your running game, the last two games, your running game has been the more consistent element or the most consistent part of your identity offensively. And so these are things that I just didn't expect to materialize. And yet, didn't matter. You still got to 11-1. Now you're in the SEC title games. Who cares how it looks? But it's just, I guess, I bet Sark is a little surprised by, the way and how this team has evolved and what they've transformed into. And you're still, where you are, still a team that is capable of winning the national championship because your defense is that good. Your defense is that good. You had two goal line stands against the Aggies, and that was a top 10 red zone offense. Usually when I wrote it down because watching the broadcast, I was like, oh, that is a hell of a stat. They going into that game, they had only had two possessions in the red zone where they didn't score at all. They had gone 43 of 45. They had scored on 43 of 45 trips in the red zone. 35 touchdowns, 10 field goals. They were money in the red zone. Colin Klein is usually money in the red zone. And they got down there twice, beginning of the game and the end of the game. One in the first quarter on the first drive, and then at the end of the game, and still could not get to not cash in. Two goal line stands in one game. That is a hell of a defensive statement by that Longhorn defense. And honestly, at this point, I truly believe with all my heart that you can win a national championship even with the way the offense is playing and as inconsistent as the special teams is right now. I think you can still win a national championship because I think the defense is that good.
Yeah.
I think that's how good they are, that you can win the way Michigan won last year.
But here's the deal. I think you win that good Michigan, but I think our offense is better than that. They're just
no, it is, but I'm saying even with it, you still can win with it right now. You can win with that. I know it sounds ludicrous and Longhorn fans don't like that, but that's how good the defense is, though. It's elite. It's an elite defense. There's just not a lot of holes on the defense. They're not. As a matter of fact, one of the holes on the defense, and this goes back to how good the defense is, right? Matter of fact, there was only one running back carry that was, matter of fact, no running back carries got over 5 yards. I want to say there was one that got five. I got to go back. I want to say there may have been one that actually got you 5 yards, but there were none over 5 yards by the running backs. Marcel Reed, actually, he had the second. This is another stat. It's one of those stats that sounds fake, but it ain't. Marcel Reed had a 24-yard run, I believe, in that game. It was the second 20-plus-yard run that Texas had allowed all season long. All season long. It was only the second one they ever allowed all season long. The first one, I believe, came in that UTSA game.
Yeah, that broken coverage that just let him slide through and get break for a touchdown, but that was
That was it. And then you had this one. This is because of the quarterback scramble. And Marcel Reed is one of the more dynamic athletes in the country, but at the quarterback position. But yeah, you had run 5 yard run by your running backs, by the Aggie running backs, and that was it. That was it. And then you had that big Marcel Reed run. Pretty much that on the ground, those were their explosive plays on the ground. This is how good that defense is, though. We'll talk about Vernon Broughton, and we'll talk about – but I want to talk that Michael Taft interception. So all week long, at least last week, you guys remember me saying that, yeah, the Texas defense doesn't have really any weaknesses. But there are a couple of, like, plays, a couple of things that you may be able to execute against the Texas defense that I've recognized in multiple games, right? In consecutive games. And remember, I identified the deep crossers. I was like, if you watch the games, Florida, Arkansas, and Kentucky all completed deep crossers versus Texas. Now, number one, you need time. If you get time, you know, that's also something that you're going to have to complete that. A guy who's running deep across the field, because it violates Texas's zone coverages. That's what I pointed out. It violates their zone coverages because you have, unless they match it, unless one defender plasters themselves to that deep crosser, he can cross to different zones within the coverage, and then nobody pick him up, almost get lost in coverage. And it happened to Texas in the Florida game, happened in the Arkansas game, and the Kentucky game. And in the Florida game, it was the quarterback threw it from the pocket. Texas was in cover three. Guy ran all the way across the field. He had time, found him. It was their big chunk yardage play in the game, in the passing game. Arkansas did it too, except Arkansas, quarterback rolled. Taylen Green, he rolled I believe he's rolling to his right and ends up completing it a deep crosser across the field. Kentucky game, you guys remember that 42-yarder, that was Vandegrift. He was extending the play, kind of scrambling to his right and completed that deep. It was a deep direct, deep crosser. Deep. Sark likes these deep rainbow crossers. You guys have seen him complete those. Kentucky got a couple of action, right? They got, I believe, two of those deep crossers. And from my recollection, Texas was in cover three. Those looks, right? Single high safety, corners responsible for deep thirds, and safety responsible for deep third. So it was it's a way for you to violate their cover three coverage. Fast forward to the Aggies. Second drive of the game, I believe, is a Taft interception, which means the play, they're still on script. These are scripted plays that they've been practicing all week long, that they prepared especially for Texas. On that Taft interception, they start off in a 2x2 set. They motion from the twins from the boundary to trips to the field. All right, that number two receiver ends up coming into like a stacked bunch, tight twins with the number one receiver. And so he ends up running a vertical route. The guy that's in motion, he ends up running a vertical route. The number two receiver to that field, he's your deep crosser. He starts off running vertical, but then he turns it into a deep crosser. He's a deep crosser going across the field. Number three receiver to that side is a tight end. He runs a wheel route. All right. Now, all these elements are important. You got a running back in the backfield, and he runs basically, he just kind of runs a little running back curl route. Just kind of sits right there in the curl. Now, all these elements are important because if Texas is in a cover three, which they were, the vertical route by the wide receiver which was the guy in motion, all right, ends up becoming the new number one. That vertical route is going to occupy that corner. He's got to take the vertical on the cover three. He's responsible for a deep third. That wheel route, Jalen Gilbo, who I believe at that time is the nickel on that wide side, he's got to take that wheel route. That number two, that ends up becoming kind of that number two. So he's got to take that wheel route. He's going to let the deep drag go once he's threatened by the wheel, because the wheel starts off in the flat, and he's a curl to flat defender. So when he sees somebody in his flat, he's going to take the flat. Going to take the flat. So he's gone. Then the running back ends up running like that little hook route. So the hook curl defender takes him. I believe Langlois Fowles in there. He ends up being the spy on the quarterback because Marcel Reed breaks the pocket and starts to break the pocket to his right, because Texas, remember, they weren't letting him go to his left. That's part of the game plan. There's a single receiver to the boundary. All right, so now we're going back to the boundary side, the short side of the field. Single receiver over there. Since he's the only receiver over there, there's no threat of a number two. And when you're in zone coverage, cover three, you're reading number two. No threat of number two. He just takes number one. They're basically playing man-to-man coverage now. I'm taking that guy. That's my guy. All right? There's one defender left with nothing to do. It's Andrew Mukuba. He's got no responsibility because he was on the boundary side, number two. They're in zone coverage, so he's not going to go with motion. They motion, trips to the field, go end up 3-by-1, and the running back, remember, he runs a little hook route to the field, so Makuba's got no work. So what does Makuba do? Same thing he did in the Georgia game. Remember in Georgia game how he gets the interception? Because he's looking for work. Everything's away from him. He's got no responsibility. So he's looking to the other, to the, basically to the play side for something to come back to his side. He's figuring, if I got no work, why am I just going to sit here? Let me try to help out. Let me add myself to the coverage on the play side. And he did it again. He got the interception in Georgia game the way, and he did it again. He, remember, he picks up the deep drag, a deep crosser. He picks him up from the other side of the formation. He's number two. He picks him up from the other side of the formation. He's got nothing going on because he's got no work to the boundary. And go watch him. He identifies him coming across the field. Picks him up like in the middle of the field, like near the hash. Found it. Identified it. Marcel Reed starts to scramble to his right. Ends up taking Michael Taft to the right because Michael Taft's playing center field. So Michael Taft's like, I'm going with the quarterback, going with the quarterback's eyes, and with this deep route. So he ends up on top of that route, that deep drag, that deep crosser, and then Mukuba ends up right underneath it. And Marcel Reed still throws it. Why does he throw it? Because they've been practicing it all week long. He's covered. He's covered. If you're looking at it as a girl, you're like, well, he's a guy underneath him and a guy over the top. Why the hell would I throw it? They've been practicing it all week. Why? Because they saw the same thing I saw in the Arkansas game, in the Kentucky game. And they're like, oh, dude, in the Florida game, like, that deep dragger against cover three. We got cover three. We got the look we want. It's on script. We practice it. You get to roll to your right. Take it. Take it. And he took it. And it was a beautiful interception by Taft. And my point is, one of the few concepts that I've identified specifically that will work on Texas. Told you guys, like, man, this will work. And beautiful play design, by the way, by the Aggies. The pressure screwed it up by Texas, number one, because got pressure on Marcel Reed, so he wasn't able to sit back in the pocket and just make a throw, cool, calm, and collected. Had to do it under duress, and had to do it rolling to his right, which Texas was by design, because Texas game planned that. But then the Texas secondary, they fixed it. The one issue that I've been saying, they got to worry about this. One thing that has come up multiple times, like there was nothing systemic that you can attack in the Texas defense. That's the problem. Like you look at different games, you go, well, that worked in that game, but I don't know if it didn't work in any other game. And you're like, well, this worked in one game, but I don't know if it worked in the other game. Kentucky was probably one of those games where we saw them give up more explosive plays via the pass than they did in any other game. But one thing that what that tells me is that Texas is self-scouting. The one thing I identified that worked, they identified it too. They're like, yeah, we got to fix it. We'll fix it. Aggies identified it. Aggies had it on the script. That's why he threw it. Pick. They never came back to it. He was like, yeah, they got to figure it out. It was a great idea. But once again, to me, that's the best play that they made on defense because I know what the Aggies were looking at, and it had worked against Texas. And Texas doesn't give up a lot of explosive plays, guys. They allow the fewest explosive plays in the country. So if they give up something, it's got to be well-designed or real executed or take a hell of an effort. And the Aggies, like I said, that just was the epitome, the microcosm. Everything the Aggies tried on offense, the Texas defense had a solution for. They really did. And that's why, this defense, I think they're the – I didn't think they would end up being the most trusted element of the team. Like you, fans and coaches, Sark, analysts, everybody, we trust the Texas defense more than we trust anything on this team. And to me, that's what the Aggie game came down to: trust. Right? Trust the Texas defense. They showed up. Trust you can trust Gunnar Helm. Right? Gunnar Helm's probably been the second most trustworthy element of this team from day one to the end of the season. Gunnar Helm. Honestly, Matthew Golden is another guy that I think turns out he's a very trustworthy element. Matthew Golden. right, from start to finish, all the wide receiving talent that Texas has, and it's a deep room, one of the deepest in the country. Everybody else has flashed and at times have, you know, receded, if you will, in that room. You've seen them, not regression really, but you've seen them, you know, have very impactful stretches and then stretches where their impact is not really seen on the stat sheet, right? You don't really – what it started with DeAndre Moore. Remember, he couldn't get a target at the beginning of the season, and then DeAndre Moore started to have these impact stretches. Ryan Wingo early on in the season, huge impact stretches early on in the season, and then after the Vanderbilt game, he went missing and came back in the game against the Aggies. Now Isaiah Bond seems to have – you know, been struggling to find the ball to find him, as Sark says, in this offense lately. Silas Bolden flashes, then you don't see him. Flashes, then you don't see him. Right? That happens in this offense. Matthew Golden's the only wide receiver out of the depth of that room that's been consistent all year long. All season long. So I think behind him, it's him. And then I think it's Trey Wisner. It just took us a while to realize it. But Trey Wisner's the dude. Trey Wisner is, you know, that... You know, see those movies where the rom-coms, where where they don't realize that their soulmate or the dream girl has been right there in front of them the whole time, yet they've been looking all over the place for the dying piece and looking all over the place for, you know, the 10 out of 10. And turns out the one that was with you the whole time, who you thought was just a girl next door, but you didn't necessarily think that they were the hottest or the dying piece. Turns out they are easily the most compatible with you. And it turns out they are actually more of your soulmate than any of the other people that you had been trying to hook up with. That's kind of what Trey Wisner's story is. Like, nobody saw Trey Wisner as being the most compatible running back with this offense. And he is. He works with all the running concepts, all the variety. He's a perfect soulmate, if you will, for this running game. And we all thought it would be C.J. Baxter. And, hell, it probably could be C.J. Baxter if he didn't get hurt. We all thought it would be Jaden Blue. It wasn't Jaden Blue for other reasons. Some people thought it would be Jerry Gibson. And it hasn't been Jerry Gibson. Nope, it's been Trey Wisner all along. It's been Trey Wisner all along. Just took us a while to get there.
Yeah. No, I mean, and that's what I'll say. Trey Wisner and Gunnar Helm are two examples of exactly what Sark has built in this culture and this, and what he wanted to put together. They're two guys that you heard about a lot out of spring and fall and practices and coming in that Sark would just rave about those guys and, you know, giving you the heads up. These guys are going to be playing for us. These guys are going to be good. And going in, he went, okay, I get they're going to play. They're going to be around. But you don't think, oh, no, these are the bell cows. This is who is going to be there week in and week out. And I think that's what Sark saw early and was hoping that they could progress in their game and it would work against other teams. But they were the ones who've been showing up all year and just saying, we are going to be here at every practice, at every game. You know that you can count on Gunnar Helm and Trey Wisner. And it showed out, you know, in a big, big road game at the end of the season when everyone's banged up and, you know, you're getting down to the nitty gritty. Those guys are still showing up every week.
Yep. And I'll throw the O-line on there, just that group now.
And Goosby.
Exactly. Considering what we saw from Goosby going in there, losing Kelvin Banks, your best player goes down. Talk about adversity. Best player on the team, offense or defense, goes down in the first quarter against the Aggies, who have one of the better defensive fronts and NFL players on their defensive line. And there was little to no drop off at all in the level of play. And that's not Kelvin Banks is still gonna be a top five, top 10 pick, deservedly so. But I think it's more of a compliment to Trevor Goosby, the redshirt freshman, that you could go into that game, hostile environment against NFL players, and obviously the opposing team is looking at you as a point of weakness. So they're trying to exploit and attack you. And yet still not only just hold your own, but actually go out there and excel. The offensive line, to me, in the last two games, they've proven that they deserve my trust and our trust.
Yeah.
And so those are the elements to me. It's It's the defense. It's Gunnar Helm. It's Matthew Golden. It is the offensive line, and it's Trey Wisner. I don't think I'm missing anything. I think those are your five most trustworthy elements of this team. And although there are some other elements that are really good and they're great and they're, you know, prolific and explosive in terms of dependability, because as I get older in my life, dependability matters to me.
It does, doesn't it?
Things I can depend on. And it's kind of what we're dealing with, right? We used to be something that you could depend on, and that is no longer going to be the case. And we'll talk about that. But you want things you can depend on, that you can rely on, that are going to travel, no matter what the situation, circumstance. You know, that's what family is about, right? That's what people in your life that matter to you are about. It's like, no. I know when the fit is the shan, I can hit this person up. I know this person will be there for me. I know I can count on this. And that's what Texas, I think those five things I mentioned, you can count on that.
Yeah.
When no matter what the situation is, Texas, they'll be there. I didn't think we'd be at that point in game 12, because against Georgia, first matchup against Georgia, I don't know. We couldn't say that about the running game.
No.
And that's say that about the O-line. We weren't saying about the O-line. No, and O-line wasn't on that list.
No, the O-line now, they get their chance to come back against Georgia now. And really their worst game of the season, and show that they do belong in the SEC. Because you talk about the O&D line for Texas that's been built in the SEC, and it was built going into it knowing that you have to win the lines to win in the SEC. And they've shown at 11-1 and the best record in the SEC that they're ready to play with them. But you get another shot to go against the big boys. And Georgia, who has been the standard of the offensive and defensive line for the last several years, now here's your second shot to go against them and prove that you can be better than what the standard has been.
Yeah. No, I'm with you. I agree. And I'm glad they're getting the chance to avenge that that loss to Georgia. All right, we'll talk about some of these standout performers a little bit from the Texas-Texas A&M game. We'll hear from Steve Sarkisian coming up next segment. But first, let's hit the horn headlines, because we haven't done that yet. Hit the horn headlines, and we'll come back and dive into some more Texas football discussion. But first, let's get educated, updated, and informed with all the top stories of the day with Patrick Davis and the horn headlines.
All right, your horn headlines brought to you by Top Gun Rentals and Lawn Equipment. In the NBA, the Rockets topped the Thunder 119-116 yesterday, with Fred VanVleet having his season high of 38 points. The Mavericks played well in Luka Doncic's return from injury, winning 137-131, with Luka scoring 36 points. And the Spurs edged out a 127-125 win over the Kings, with Victor Wembanyama getting a triple-double with 24 points, 13 rebounds, and 11 assists. In college basketball, Texas men's beat Delaware State 90-68 over the weekend. Trey Johnson led the Horns in scoring with 21 points, and Caden Shedrick added a double-double with 14 points and 11 rebounds. They're back in action again Wednesday against NC State. The Longhorn women took home the Gulf Coast Showcase Championship, knocking off number 12 West Virginia 78-73 in the final game, led by Aaliyah Moore with 20 points and Madison Booker with 19. Their next matchup comes Thursday against number 3 Notre Dame. In college football, Texas finished their regular season play with a 17-7 win over Texas A&M. The win propels Texas in the SEC Championship game on Saturday in a return matchup with Georgia. Elsewhere, Michigan upset Ohio State 13-10, Syracuse took down Miami 42-38, and South Carolina knocked off Clemson 17-14. Texas moved up to number 2 in the latest AP poll. In the NFL, Cowboys got their first win of the season on Thanksgiving, beating the Giants 27-20. With DeMarvion Overshawn getting his first pick six of his career, the Texans held on to pick up a 23-20 win over the Jaguars after a late hit took Trevor Lawrence out of the game. Joe Mixon once again rushed for over 100 yards in the game. Tonight, the Browns take on the Broncos in Denver on Monday Night Football, and that is your Horn Headlines.
Horn Headlines brought to you by Top Gun Rentals and Lawn Equipment. Not sure what's worse right now, my Cowboys or our choices for politicians lately. But nothing would be worse than missing out on end-of-year deals on Steel, Hustler, Gravely, and Toro mowers and lawn equipment this month at Top Gun. TopGun.net. We'll shoot you straight.
All right, thank you, Patrick, for the Horn headlines. All right, let's get to the break here so we can come back and go behind the burnt orange curtain. We want to talk some Texas football. Hear from Steve Sarkisian, and then we'll talk about some of the individual standout performances from the Longhorns in that Texas A&M game. All of that and more right here on the Rodcast featuring Patrick Davis. I'm Lifetime Longhorn. Rod Babers coming back on the Horn.
Behind the Burnt Orange Curtain is brought to you by UBO Business Services. Visit them at UBO.com. Great people, great service, endless possibilities.
And they were all asking themselves the same question. What is behind that curtain?
All right, welcome back to the Rodcast. Time to get to some Texas football conversation. The run game. I said after the Kentucky game, it's possible, just kind of watching the film, that the run game is reaching its maturity. That we're starting to see the run game start to peak at the right time for Texas. In the A&M game, I said, we'll see if it travels. If it travels to A&M, then we know it's starting to peak at the right time. Well, it traveled because, you know, Trey Wisner had a career day, 186 yards rushing. And I counted, there were eight runs in that game. There were explosive runs of 10-plus yards. Two of them were by quarterbacks, so they take them off. And just look at running back runs, so it ends up with six of them. You had seven such runs in that Kentucky game. So you're talking about 13 runs, explosive runs by the running backs in the last two games for the Longhorns, and out of those 13 plays, I counted nine of them out of 13 were either wide zone or split wide zone of some kind. So Texas, they found their bread and butter concept again in the split wide zone and the wide zone. Right, it's working for them. Remember, I told you that was their most utilized, deployed run concept with Bijan and Rojo, and last year with Jay Brooks. That they prefer to be a wide zone running team and stack a lot of concepts off of that. They seem to have found that the counter is working. I say the counter is probably the second most important run or the second most efficient, effective run concept for them right now. It's in the last two games since they've really started to peak in the run game. They run, you know, the GY counter and the counters really well too. I see them run duo, which is basically kind of a double team at the point of attack. Either way, here's Sark talking about how they're maturing in the run game and when the run game is working, how it really can guide, you know, really the philosophy of this offense.
Yeah, we're just so much more well-versed, you know, when we can run it. You know, you saw today a couple of the play-action pass things. We were able to now throw some balls down the field and take a few shots. And you know, we hit two. We got a pass interference on another one. And that's, you know, you're not going to hit them all, but we have to be able to play that style of game. And I think the versatility that we have starts with our ability to run the ball, because that sets up the screens, that sets up you know, the perimeter stuff, the advantage throws, then the play action pass. And so the run game is just, it's huge, and the last few weeks it's been rolling for us.
Yeah, it definitely has been rolling for him. We talk about we'll hear from Sark talking about Trey Wisner, but you know, I always say to win games you got to break tendency. One thing that juiced the run game versus the Aggies was the quarterback run game, right? You had scrambles by the quarterback from Quinn, a couple of big scrambles in the game by him. You're at Arch with the design quarterback runs, and that's breaking tendency. We have not seen the Arch Manning package in a critical situation like you did there for the red zone. Here is Sark talking about maybe what led to using Arch. What was the point of creativity into using Arch out there versus the Aggies?
We've had that going for a little bit. It was just figuring out the right timing of it, and then naturally this week with Quinn being limited some, that we Arch got some more reps, and we just wanted to keep him engaged in the game and find some opportunities for him. And it's a heck of a touchdown run by him to stay in bounds and get in the end zone, and that really kind of sparked us there to get everything started.
It was a great run. Like I said, they just wanted it was fourth and short. They just wanted a first down, I'm sure. And he was easily going to get the first down. And then he just pulled a beast mode kind of move and decided, now I think I can get a touchdown. And showed agility and showed strength and showed, showed how really he can play through contact, right? Got contact balance as a quarterback. Not something you think you'd be using that term with describing a Manning, but he certainly got it. Trey Wiseman's got that contact balance. He's got a combination of balance and vision and patience and burst as well at the running back position right now that's leading to him becoming the focal point of the running game, the bell cow, the workhorse of this running game. Here's start talking about Trey Wiseman and what he means to this Texas offense.
You know, he earned a lot of trust from us a year ago. You know, this guy, he was not, as much as everyone talks about our five-star recruits and four-star recruits, Trey was not one of those guys. You know, he was a really good high school football player, and the makeup of him, his mentality, and from the day he showed up, all he's done is work his tail off and be a great teammate. And last year on special teams, he earned our trust by the way he covered kicks and did those things. And then training camp, when we had the back-to-back injuries with CJ and Christian, we had to revamp some things of what it was going to look like. And all Trey Wiseman did was keep working. And when his opportunities came, he took advantage of them. And I think he was ready to take off earlier in the season, and he gets a little nicked up, kind of gets a hamstring, I think maybe UTSA game, and that slowed him down. And now he's back healthy. I don't know how healthy he is right now after 33 carries, but we'll see. But all he does is work, and all he does is continue just to praise his teammates. It's never about Trey. It's about his teammates. And I think that's why the guys kind of love him so much, too, and want so much success that he's having.
All right, there's Sark talking about Trey Wiseman.
Fun note with Trey Wiseman, too, is Trey Wiseman, the last place he visited before committing to Texas was Texas A&M. That was another one of his major schools that he was looking at. So yet another one of those guys in that who knew where he was going to visit, like where he was going to play, understood what this rivalry was, understood getting recruited by both teams, but a guy that A&M wanted to bring in as well. And so it's another interesting piece. And when you realize how close these two teams are.
Yeah. No, it's a good point. I didn't realize that he was that close to becoming an Aggie himself. I was that close to becoming an Aggie. Yeah, no, the closer you are to it, like I said, probably half of these guys took recruiting visits to both Texas and Texas A&M. And you definitely feel like guys who have been around a long time, guys, who have some of the veterans on the team, you thought that maybe it meant more to them. But I think maybe for the guys who had a connection with both, consider it's a rekindled rivalry. Maybe those guys had some added incentive as well. The defensive line, I mean, they played like they had added incentive. They played lights out. We'll talk about Vernon Broughton and what he did here in just a second, but here's Sark talking about the defensive line and how they really set the tone.
Well, I thought our defensive line played fantastic. You know, they really had a tremendous game. I thought offensively, I really thought we controlled the line of scrimmage tonight, and I was really proud of Trevor Goosby. When Kelvin went down, stepped in for his first real action, and I thought performed well in not an easy environment to do that. And so, the game's won up front. We don't play flag football. We don't play 7-on-7. You got to be really good up front, especially in this conference. And I think we've improved at the line of scrimmage as the year's gone on both sides of the ball, quite frankly. I think we're utilizing our depth on the defensive line, and I think our offensive line is playing some of their best football right now throughout as the season's gone on.
That is the truth, no doubt about that O-line. Vernon Broughton, when I looked at, the guys who are going to be, potential MVPs in this game or the guys who are going to be the standout performers in this game, I'll admit I did not see Vernon Broughton, but probably should have because Vernon Broughton had really just an all-time great performance. He had his best game that he's ever played in his career versus the Aggies. Two sacks in that game, had a fumble recovery in that game as well. There was one possession where he just wreaked havoc all three downs. Essentially, it just totally just wrecked one drive, one possession for the Aggies. Here's Sark when he was asked about Vernon Broughton and what kind of game did he had versus the Aggies.
Tremendous, you know, tremendous. You know, those guys, Alfred and Vernon, are really versatile players, you know, because, A, their length and their athleticism. But both those guys have really worked at their craft to be very good run defenders for us, and which was something we challenged them on all offseason. And then they have the ability to rush the passer because of athleticism and their length. And Vernon obviously showed up tonight with a couple of really big plays. I really think on that fourth down stop on the goal line, I think he's impactful on that play too. I got to look at the tape. But there's a nice blend going right now with those two and Jermaine and Bill of what kind of they're how they're working and how they're kind of all playing together.
Oh, he's right. Yeah, on that one. Ethan Burke got the tackle for loss, the last fourth down on a goal line stand for the Aggies. If Ethan Burke doesn't make the stop, Vernon Broughton's going to make the stop, or Alfred Collins, I believe, are going to make the stop. They both had penetrated and were right there on the other side of the line of scrimmage ready to make the stop. So there was no way that guy was going to go. Ended up being a 2 or 3 yard loss, actually, even on the play. All right, we come back. We'll talk about this new – I don't know. It seems like it's a new trend. I remember it happening in like some rivalry games back in the day. But now it seems like everybody wants to do it. Even Texas had to be actually deterred from doing this on the field. We'll talk about that and more on the other side with Off the Record right here on the Rodcast featuring Patrick Davis on Lifetime Longhorn. Rod Babers coming back on the horn.
D.D. Megadoodoo, I'm sorry, Mangoodoo.
Once it's turned on, the sign will spell out Deli Cat Essen.
Well, I don't get a break my income.
Well, congratulations. Continue good sex in the Big East.
Thank you, Jimmy.
And boom goes the dynamite.
It's time for another edition of Off the Record.
Do it live. I'll write it and we'll do it live. F***ing thing sucks.
All right, welcome back to the Rodcast. We talked about it on Wednesday. There was no way Ryan Day could lose that game. And he lost that game.
Go Blue.
Wow. I can't believe it. I was watching it. I was like, this is not going to happen. It's not going to happen to Ryan Day. He's not going to lose to Michigan.
They
lost every asset that they had, potentially on the roster, are all gone. It was the worst Michigan team in, I don't know, decades.
6-5 going into that game.
Oh, man.
And, yeah, you kept watching it being like, well, if Michigan, like, they're not pulling away. So, at some point, Ohio State's going to get it going offensively. Eventually. Will Howard will figure it out, and they'll get the ball rolling, and then they'll put up, like, 24 points in the fourth quarter, and there'll be a blowout. And
never happened. It's Will Spill the Peel, as I call him. Will Spill the Peel Howard. He showed up on him.
Man.
I can't believe it. I still can't believe it. And I wonder if – I wonder what Ryan Day's future is. It does sound crazy that you would think about firing somebody who's dominated basically that conference other than your rival.
Yeah.
It will be the ultimate test because they always say if you don't beat your rival, you're on the hot seat. That's really the only issue with him is that he hasn't beaten his rival. Other than that, he's proven to be at least a good coach.
Yeah, I mean, that's what it's going to be in the playoffs. If he gets knocked out in the first round of the playoffs – then I think, you know what name was trending on social media after that game?
Who?
Mike Vrabel.
Oh.
Former Ohio State player.
Yeah, I can see that.
Was there with Urban Meyer for a little bit, even though Urban Meyer doesn't remember who he is. But that was the name that was trending after the fact of a coach who they believe might be able to bring some toughness to this Ohio State program that it seems to be lacking. But no, that it was... Yeah, I was not expecting that to start off the day. I told you I thought it could be a game just because it's a rivalry, just like everybody else that was playing over the weekend. You thought maybe it could be like that Georgia Tech game that was insane, that goes to 8 overtimes.
Yeah, just go, they're that just was crazy.
They're just rivalry games, so they could always be a game. But yeah, for Michigan just to play hard nosed Michigan football and never let Ohio State get out of the breaks. And then Ohio State having seniors that never beat Michigan.
Never beat Michigan.
Having guys that just, I mean, that is crazy to say we were in like a heyday, a prime period of Ohio State. Well, what'd you guys? What was your record against Michigan? Not good. Not good.
Yeah, 40. I believe the record for Ryan Day is 47-1 versus the Big Ten and 1-4 versus Michigan.
Yeah.
If I'm not mistaken, I believe that's it. That's how
absurd. It's an insane stat.
Absolutely absurd. I don't know what you do if you're the administration. What do you do about that? It's obvious he can't beat Michigan. If you can't beat him this year, you was never going to be able to beat him. He can't beat Michigan. I don't know what it is. Now it's psychological. Now you know he's thinking about it. Now you know. It's like the yips at this point. It's like, dude, you can't beat him. And you know you can't beat him. What is it? You got Chip Kelly as your OC. This is a, what, 20-something, $30 million roster they put together. Can't do it. Oof. Right, that's a dark place. Remember we played the audio of him comparing losing to Michigan? He said the only thing that was worse was losing his father.
Yeah.
He said, losing my father was worse. But that's about it. Everything else, that's worse, one of the worst things ever.
I'm telling you, this is up there.
That was before this loss.
That was against a really, really good Michigan team.
Yeah, that was against a team that won the national title, Michigan team. But what about this Michigan team that, it's one of the worst ever. I can't believe that actually. That's how you know, man. That's why they play the game. And you're right, it's a rivalry thing. Speaking of rivalry games, because Texas played their rivalry game. And Texas had to be, I saw this, that Texas had to be ushered off the field by Sark.
Yeah, they went back out there,
They went out there. They wanted to go do something to the midfield logo. And this is a thing now. We've seen it before. We saw it in the past. Every now and then somebody will plant a flag or, you know, stomp on somebody in the middle of somebody's field. And, yeah, it made the headlines. But it wasn't something that was widespread. It happened. It was a very isolated thing.
Yeah.
Now it seems like it's the thing. And Texas done it, too. I remember Bender did it at the Michigan game. Mm-hmm. They went out and planted the flag. I believe they did one at the Oklahoma game either this year or last time they beat them. We've seen Texas do it. So it is something that you do.
But the Oklahoma
it's not just
game,
against rivals.
The Oklahoma
but
game's now it's neutral field, so it's not quite the same.
Huh?
The Oklahoma game is neutral.
It is. It is. But I totally get it. I'm just pointing out Texas is also part of it. They do this kind of stuff too. And it's happening like around the country. So now you're starting to see it. And Michigan, Ohio State, the reason I brought it up is because there was like a brawl after the game. And apparently the brawl started with the players from Michigan trying to plant their flag on the Ohio State field, and Ohio State wasn't having it. And this is actually a situation I see both sides. I do see the side where, man, if you want to, you could, the NCAA will probably try to make some rule now against playing your flag or disrespecting some team in the post game, whatever, on their field. But hey, man, you know, you lost the game. You know, I know it's still your field, but you got whipped on your own damn field. It's hard for you to go out there and try to fight somebody when during the game you lost the actual fight of the game, but now you want to go fight after the game. You know, that's kind of that's a little cupcake. And I get the people who are defending their home turf. I'm not going to allow you to disrespect my home turf like that. So I get them wanting to fight too. It's one of the situations where I see why both sides want to do it. I get it. So they'll probably have to make a rule against it.
No, and
pretty soon.
Yeah, they will. And I mean, it's that feeling of like, it's like we talked about it last week of storming the field and that everybody does it now.
Everybody does it now. It's not
fun or cool because everybody does it. If everybody does it, who cares? I get a bit more of it of Michigan going up and saying, we're going to go stomp on your logo because this is the biggest win of our season. But if you're one of these teams that's going on to play on bigger things, this hopefully isn't the biggest win of your season. I get it's a rival and everything else, but, man, we got bigger fish to fry. Y'all have fun playing in the Texas Bowl, man. We're going to go play for a national title. Like, at a certain point, you go, I get it, man. And I think that's what Sark's message was. This isn't the end of our – like, this is what you do when this is your biggest game. We beat A&M. Cool. Let's go win the SEC championship. Let's go win a national title.
Yeah. No, I'm with you. It's I think you're right with it, but it's right. One of those things, like you say, it's more widespread now. So because it's not isolated incidents, now you got to adjust because everybody wants to do it.
Yeah,
and you didn't see it before. Before it was like one or two people did it, and that's why, you know. Oh man, and you, I don't know if you will see a skirmish or anything break out as a result of it. Now
you didn't see people get pepper sprayed.
Yeah, no, the fights are getting. I mean, that was a serious brawl after the.
Yeah, I mean, that's what they pepper sprayed that video footage of like in the scrum where you saw police basically on both sides pepper spraying at guys. I mean, that's. Can you imagine You're a senior for Ohio State. You just lost to Michigan for the fourth time. You're going to your locker room. You're finish up. Now they come to plant the flag. You're not even really much in the fight, but you know your buddies are fighting, so you got to go protect your brothers now. And you're in this fight, and you're like, this sucks, man. I just want to go to the locker room, and I'm done with this. And then you get pepper sprayed. And now you got to go in and wipe your eyes, your bloodshot eyes, and deal with, you know, the post-game of that. And then all of that, and then in 2 weeks you're in the college football playoffs.
That's true.
Like, of that, and your season's not over. You're still playing for a national title. Now, you're not in the Big Ten championship game anymore, so you're not playing next week. But in 2 weeks, you got to go back out and try and play, and now you drop down in that ranking, so you're not going to play get as much of an easy road, probably.
Man, it's wild. Yeah, no, you're right about that. Ohio State, I don't really have I don't have that much faith in Will Howard actually. With Ohio State.
What was the line of the game?
I've watched him play too much.
The line of the game, I can't remember who's announcing it, but the line of the game was was when Will Howard comes back out and plays pretty well after a turnover, and he goes, something about Will Howard, man, he just gets back up after a turnover and keeps going. You go, because he turns it over a lot. He's had a lot of practice at that.
Yeah, like, he's like, oh, gotta forget about that one. Move it on. I was like, no, that's why he got the nickname for me.
That and the announcers during the Iron Bowl when Hugh Freeze didn't go for it, like on fourth and two at the goal line and kicked a field goal. Went for the false start and then went for the offsides and then kicked a field goal. And the announcers basically lit into him like, it's the Iron Bowl. You're playing a better team. You go for it. And the grow a set by a bunch of announcers being like, dude, this is why you suck.
Just challenges manhood like live on air.
Go for it, man. It's 2024. Everyone goes for it.
Yeah. No, they had a few skirmishes in that game, too.
Yeah.
No doubt.
North Carolina, NC State got into it.
Yep, NC State. Arkansas, Missouri. Fight after that game. No, like fight week, man. Like rivalry week, fight week. So we'll see if that feistiness that we saw in rivalry week, if that carries over into championship week, which the Longhorns will be a part of, facing the Georgia Bulldogs to avenge their only loss on the season. We'll talk a little bit more about that on the other side, but some NFL discussion. Talk about some of the games around the league this past weekend. We'll discuss some of the other matchups that we saw over college football weekend too. All of that and more right here on the Rodcast featuring Patrick Davis on Lifetime Longhorn. Rod Babers coming back on the horn.